years for an interim head of school, but we had some extra slots available. And so we took advantage of that to try and host some additional meetings like this one, where we could start to get some finality on things like school reopening. And so over the last several weeks, a lot of folks have been participating in a number of committees that are looking at various scenarios for how the schools should reopen, health and wellness, academic equity, and operations. And so I just wanted to thank everybody. There's a significant amount of effort and time that these folks have spent in reviewing the situations and reviewing the scenarios and getting to a lot of details with respect to how we could open the school and what the alternatives and options are. And so sitting on top of those three subcommittees is an oversight committee headed by Ricardo, our head of school, acting head of school. And so I wanted to give Ricardo and the team an opportunity to brief the board and the community on the findings and recommendations that the committees have come up with. And so we wanted to sit down and listen to what they had to say and discuss that and make some decisions with respect to reopening of the school and under what conditions and how we would do that and what it would look like moving forward. Before we do that, I know we have comments or questions or open period for folks to ask questions. I know that a number of folks had submitted questions. A lot of folks wanted to hear the briefing first and then ask questions afterwards. So what we'll do is we'll let Ricardo and the team go through their briefing slides. We'll have some discussions. We'll let open the floor up to question and answers. And we'll allow folks to make public comments at that point in time. And we'll try and manager, there are a lot of folks that are in the meeting, and so we just want to make sure that we give as many folks an opportunity to say what they wanted to say or comment, and then the board will go into a discussion and vote on the recommendations of the committee. So without further ado, I guess I'll turn it over. Unless any other board members had any comments or questions or thoughts, before then we can turn it over to Ricardo and the team to start the briefing. Any comments from any board members? I'll take that as a note. Okay, so Ricardo, I'll turn it over to you, and we can get started on the briefing that the team put together. You're muted.
Thank you, Elias. Just a quick request from one of the co-hosts. We still have an influx of people coming in. So if somebody could make sure that people are being admitted. So I need a co-host to take up that role to make sure that people are...
I'm watching it.
Okay. Thank you so much. I will... share my screen and make sure that is the screen visible to everybody?
Yes.
Thank you. So before diving in, I too would like to extend my deepest appreciation to the 50, 60 people that were an active part of the four working groups who dedicated tremendous amount of time both at working group meetings and offline meetings. And all this effort has been called into this brief presentation of the recommendation that we collectively are bringing together today to the board. I also do want to extend our deepest appreciation to our parents, our staff, our families, our students for having responded to all the surveys that we issued in a very brief period of time. They were instrumental to inform the work that we did at all levels. So thank you so, so very much for the grace and the kindness that you all have shared and being a part in this analysis and in the formulation of this recommendation. As we all know, it is an amazingly uncertain time, and trying to provide certainty in such an environment is a huge, huge challenge. And we are trying to put a stake in the ground so that we can, basically 30 days away from reopening, implement reopening plans. And they, as you will see, they are going to be rolling plans as we move through this year, and at least especially through the first semester. This first chart just reaffirms what the governor told us, that we are reopening in minimal to moderate community spread environment. And that is the guideline. The space that we have is a hybrid reopening environment with considerable flexibility to consider and include a virtual reopening. So there is a space there between virtual and hybrid that the governor has allowed schools and districts to make the best decision for each of their communities. Just as a reference, most of you have probably seen this level of detail with regards to the gating criteria that also were put out by the state. What the important point to highlight here is that if we look at the yellow scenario 2 that we are in, the breadth of criteria, that anywhere from 10 to 100 new cases per 100,000, from 3 to 10% of people testing positive and so on, is a wide bandwidth. It's a wide band. And so the committees feel that, for the near future, it is unlikely that we will see the community with all the measures that are being implemented at the state level. We believe it's unlikely that we will be significantly shifting into the red or the green. The important thing that we need to be prepared for is not knowing what the future will look like, is that as we see the trends, that we will be able to respond quickly and address either the positive trends or the negative trends. But the bandwidth in which we are working with in the yellow scenario is quite wide. This is a summary of the four scenarios that the working groups explored. The first scenario is a full 100% virtual learning environment, and it brackets both a yellow scenario and the red scenario. As we know, as we experienced in the early spring, schools are closed. Everything is done virtually. Essential workers come to the school, like we had mostly our facilities staff, our custodial staff, for a while our drivers, and the essential educational staff primarily worked remotely in ensuring that virtual learning was ramped up. Scenario two is really the beginning of a hybrid virtual learning. I mean, the foundation is a scenario one, and then it gets expanded to slowly start bringing on campus subsets of our student body. And our co-chairs, Jackie and Juliana, in their presentation of the academic inequity working group in their little report, we'll get into more details addressing the bullet points that are highlighted here. Scenario three is an outright phased reopening, where it was a typical hybrid, You know, we contemplated two scenarios. One was a K-5 scenario, a K-5 cohort on campus, 1,100 students, and the 6-12 in a virtual environment. And then we also discussed what it might look like if we brought subsets of students across the K-12 environment, and we just brought parts of them through the full K-12. So some would be on campus, some would be remote, and there would be a rotation schedule. Scenario 4 is a full reopening. Right now, if we think that all of this analysis is being conducted, was being conducted as a scenario analysis for the September 8th reopening of the school, the committees very quickly eliminated scenario 4 as a probability, and that was confirmed as a possibility. That was confirmed by the guidance from the governor. And the guidance from the governor allowed us to contemplate a scenario 3, and we will discuss more, you know, as we go through the presentation. We will discuss why we have chosen at this point in time not to recommend a phased scenario 3 reopening to the board. So this is the recommendation that the committees would like to present to the board. And we call it a reopening school using scenario 2, a hybrid virtual learning environment, in a staged fashion. So on September 8th, we are looking to reopen in a fully remote virtual environment. And here we put for a minimum of one semester, and we will talk more about that pinning of a one semester target at this point in time. In the meanwhile, this does not mean that we are going to stay 100% virtual for the first semester. Within 30 days of reopening, the idea is that we start rolling out small group activities, and we will start bringing in very safe and controlled situations cohorts of our students. I mean, we all know the importance, especially for our smallest students, our youngest students, the importance of the interaction. And of course, interaction in a COVID-19 world will look different than the typical interaction that all children and all youth are used to, if we were heading to a normal school reopening. That will look different, but it will complement the the virtual learning experience. As we move there with the small group back-to-back activities, after that, we are going to expand it to extended support activities and instructional related activities. And we will talk more about that. The other important aspect in this process as we reopen is promptly respond to any COVID-19 cases and reassess reopening strategy should it be necessary. For us to open, there are defined supports both by the county and by the state in terms of pre-opening testing. We've been dealing through the charter school network with the county reopening, the governor and county testing, which would be done before school starts, but it needs a physical presence. The proposed testing program that the state has put out, as the governor announced, allows for a more remote testing program, so people would not have to come to school, be tested, and then go back and quarantine themselves. And so our health and wellness team and we is working with our liaison from DPH and also with the contact, we're working with the contacts at the county and at the state to see which option would serve us best at the time that we are going to reopen, with a greater presence. But this is not something that we would have to have a full implementation come September 8th, because we're not opening in a hybrid scenario at this time. And over this first semester, we will evaluate the community spread. Of course, monitoring how the infection rates evolve up and down, looking at the criteria that were presented in the earlier slide, and see what the trends are. Are we trending towards green? Are we staying in the yellow? Are we trending towards the red? And the important thing for us is to be able to promptly respond with the necessary measures so that we, A, ensure the health, wellness, and safety of our staff, our students, our families, while we continue to deliver quality academic services. We, as working groups, decided to implement a linear decision tree, three gateways that we had to pass. The first is a gateway of health and wellness. Do we have the conditions to reopen school on September 8th to ensure that we will be able to minimize exposures and risks? If we felt that was the case, then we would say, okay, we can move to the next gateway, which is, can we deliver the academic programming in the proposed environment, in the proposed scenario? These gateways, of course, are most relevant if we're thinking about a hybrid reopening scenario, because one of the challenges that we all know and that we have heard, both locally at Odyssey, but also across the state, that there are concerns about staff coming back to an environment that may not have all the safety protocols in place to ensure a safe and healthy environment for staff to work with the students and for the students to conduct their normal activities. Once we've passed these two thresholds, the third threshold is, what are the operating and service supports? What are the transportation supports? What are the food service supports? What are the facility supports that will be required to be able to ascertain and ensure the health and wellness protocols that are established, be it by the state or be it by our own health and wellness staff, our nurses, and also what it takes to deliver the academic program. So for example, if we have to clean bathrooms every 2 hours during the school day, do we have the staff to do that and then also do a deep clean at the end of the day? If we have a number of teachers that are unable to come back to work and be physically present, do we have substitute teachers to be able to step in, to be able to conduct the on-site instruction? So we went through we analyzed the different options through these three gateways, through these three thresholds, and that informed the recommendation path. And that it informed how we narrowed down the recommendations to the one that was just presented. With this background introduction, I would like to pass the baton to Brittany Henning, who was the co-chair of the Health and Wellness Working Group, and she will provide you some highlights with regards to the analysis that was done by the Health and Wellness Group. If one of the co-hosts could, can you unmute Brittany? Brittany?
Good evening, I'm Brittany Henning. So we went through as hard as we could with all the scenarios and thinking about Odyssey. Really, our team put a lot of hard work into this. So our obstacles to really meet scenario 3 and 4 are we're gonna kind of overview here just so it's clear for the board and the families and our community. So we did send a survey out to staff, trying to figure out what staff is able to come back and what staff would not be able to come back. So the definition was defined as staff that had either a pre-existing condition or an FMLA reason not to return to campus in the fall. So when we surveyed the staff, 44 of the 128 that had returned the survey said that they would not be able to come back on campus in the fall, given the current constraints. So that is spread out through the 4 buildings in the K-12 setting. So it was a significant amount. Another big concern we had is the availability of currently of tests for staff to come back on campus. They would need a screening test done. We would need to wait the time frame and get those results before they come back on campus. In the event that they're positive, they would then be quarantined and not able to service Odyssey until the quarantine period was over. So we do have concerns about the timeliness of those tests coming through. We also looked at the facilities. Additional staff needing to clean, it'll be additional cost to Odyssey, how to maintain the cleanliness, the materials and the PPE that would be needed, our current HVAC and ventilation system, and is it really supported in these scenarios to create the safest environment for not only our children, but staff. And then we did look at UVC lighting to create a cleaner environment. It's a little bit pricey to really use it in scenario 3 and 4. Some of my biggest concerns and concerns that we looked at with the group were overall our social distancing. So the physical classroom size, many of the classrooms at Odyssey, we did go in and measure. They would really only accommodate 8 children with the spacing that we would need of the 6 feet. The other thing is many of the classrooms are made with tables, so we'd have to change out those to facilitate that. And again, it is very limited in the amount of physical children you can fit. Another big barrier at Odyssey is our hallways. If you're familiar with the buildings, many of the hallways are not as wide as they would need to be. We could try to use one-way traffic, but it's really not, you really can't do it in the high school because we have the big middle section that's cut out. So you really can't just have hallways with one-way movement in them. Also bathroom usage, all the grades share all the bathrooms except for kindergarten. So really identifying whose children were in and out in scenarios 3 and 4. Also, transportation, busing. We really are limited on the amount of children that we could safely put on buses. We could ride with the windows open as the weather changes and it gets colder. This is another safety risk for children. When we went through the schematics and looked at the buses to adequately space out these children, we would only be able to accommodate 12 to 16 children on a bus. Some of the children could sit closer together if they were from the same family. So that was another big concern of the teams, mine, Evans from transportation. And then additional costs. We would have to have an additional resources to support all of these, cleaning, transportation, even staffing to cover the children further as they're distancing. And then a big thought that we had a lot of support from our school counselors, our family crisis therapists, and we did really discuss deeply what are the impacts socially and emotionally on a child if someone in their class were to become ill, if their teacher were to become ill, and what that might look like. So these were some of our big concerns. I know I went through those quite quickly, but just so you could get an overview of some of the many things that we did talk about as the group. So we really felt like we could not implement all these things safely into scenarios 3 and 4 currently on campus. I know a lot of people have focused on, we need more time, we need more time. Ours is really not the time aspect. If we had a perfect castle, we could really incorporate all these things. We're really kind of barriered more by implementing all these with the expensive costs that they would need it here.
Thank you, Brittany.
Thank you, guys.
So in terms of the going through the health and wellness gateway, you know, once we've worked through that and put the best thinking around that gateway, you know, we you know, kept diving into the academic and equity initiatives. And I'm going to invite Jackie and Juliana, who chaired the committee or the working group, to share their thinking and their rationale and provide a considerable more flavor around what scenario two looks like that we had mentioned, that there's a progressive rollout of activities in a controlled small group environment during the fall to integrate with the virtual learning environment.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Juliana Shan, and together with Jackie McCutcheon, we lead the curriculum and instruction team for Odyssey. Both of us have been working at Odyssey for the past 5 years, originally as eighth grade teachers for the first four. In addition to my job at school, I am also the parent of a child entering kindergarten this upcoming school year.
Hi, everyone. Like Juliana said, I'm Jackie McCutcheon. I've had the opportunity to work in the middle school as a math teacher since 2015. But during this 2019-2020 school year, both Juliana and I have been in all four buildings working with our students and staff. As the chairs of the Academic and Equity Working Group, we designed our reopening plans to ensure academic advancement while keeping students and staff safe. Having considered a variety of hybrid scenarios and rotating schedules, we determined that our students will do better with the consistency in virtual learning. Scenario two, therefore, delivers this best alternative when that full-time in-person instruction is not possible or safe. So if we're going to do education safely, we need to make sure we do it right. We learned our lesson from transitioning mid-semester last year, and we received tremendous feedback from our students, our families, and our staff. We will discuss what we learned and how we intend to successfully implement an entirely different hybrid virtual learning model known as scenario two for this fall.
So we have learned a lot this spring from remote learning. Specifically, the relationships between the teacher and the student and families are essential. While in scenario two, we can focus on establishing relationships with our students and community with on-campus activities. We have started a committee already that is in the beginning stages of planning small events for students to participate in outside at school. We also learned that both synchronous, meaning live classes, and asynchronous learning, which is off the computer or independent tasks, are necessary for student success. For the Greek language classes in particular, asynchronous instruction created a lot of friction for our foreign language instruction. In the scenario two virtual learning, grades K through 12 teachers will use both synchronous and asynchronous structures to connect with their students as much as possible, so we're reaching our entire student body population and addressing all of their learning needs. Lastly, teachers, students, parents, and guardians also need to be taught the platforms that we are using. All stakeholders have varying levels of knowledge with technology, especially our younger students who really rely on support to access their instruction.
So we want to make it really clear that the remote learning that took place in the spring will look different than virtual learning that is being recommended for this fall. Throughout our planning process on the Academic and Equity Working Group, we used all of that feedback. We used the survey results, the inputs from the stakeholders, our parents, our K-12 team leaders, department heads, academic deans, to all inform these decisions. We listened and we knew that students craved more face-to-face time between the students and teachers. Scenario two, virtual learning, is designed by the administrative team to allow both that synchronous and asynchronous instruction for students every day. If the board adopts our recommendation of scenario two tonight, we can begin to immediately finalize those schedules and promptly communicate them to our teachers and our students so we can best prepare for fall. We thoroughly researched these virtual learning models, instructional designs, and appropriate screen time, which we knew was a concern that many parents shared, particularly for our younger students. Our OCS senior leadership team will be reaching out to our community within the following week, pending the reopening decision. Information will be included regarding technology, Wi-Fi platforms, supplies, and other critical items to be communicated with all of you. We're preparing for the extensive training for our staff and in-service days, And we're going to focus on analyzing and prioritizing our curriculum so that it fits within this virtual learning model. We're going to train staff in creating consistent opportunities for all students to work on grade appropriate assignments, creating and engaging in high level tasks, delivering strong instruction, and setting clear expectations while defining accountability. By identifying the ultimate goal, the skill, the tasks within each lesson, and the resources that are needed to achieve those, we will be able to outline scope and sequence content for both asynchronous and synchronous virtual instruction. We want to ensure that all of our students are working with grade level foundational skills while targeting remediation in small groups or intervention as needed, bringing those students back on campus as soon as possible. So throughout the marking period, teachers will monitor student progress and will continue to pay close attention to closing that gap while still advancing with grade level skills.
There is a continued plan to diagnose unfinished learning. Students will be assessed in the beginning of the year using baseline assessments and STAR testing, all of which can be completed remotely with their teacher. In regards to our high school students, we are determining right now how to best assess them. The Delaware Department of Education has already committed to supporting this effort to PSAT and SAT test our high school population, adhering to social distancing and possibly using staggering schedules. In order to support the curriculum, technological needs have to be met. During a previous board meeting, approval was already made for one-to-one technology, so all students have access to devices. These devices will ensure that students have access to the necessary tools for virtual learning. A lesson learned throughout remote learning was that we needed to streamline our resources for students. To address this, K-12 will be utilizing both Schoology and ClassLink. Schoology is a learning management system that will house all the curriculum and activities for the students. And ClassLink, which some of you may already be familiar with from the spring, is a single sign-on that will allow for students and staff to access additional sites and resources to support all students' learning. The use of these two platforms will allow teachers to further develop core content skills necessary to further the students' learning. Training will be available to students and families to educate themselves with these new platforms. Teachers will also be creating back-to-school activities to continue to expose students to Schoology, ClassLink, and other educational applications and websites within the first few weeks of school. Our goal is to create Odyssey Charter School students' experiences and offer a variety of opportunities for students to interact and see their peers and teachers in a social and an academic setting. Our goal is to create an environment where students can come on campus for small group optional social activities and specifically targeted instruction. This could include virtual learning cafes, micro classes such as science labs, Greek language communication for both FLESS and immersion students, in-car driver education instruction, RTI support, reading groups, and small group assessment. With the approval of Scenario 2, we will be able to focus additional efforts on defining and maximizing these opportunities for students to come back on campus in small groups while accommodating social distancing per health and safety regulations. This will just further enhance the student experience that we are offering at Odyssey for students to interact and see their peers and teachers in a social and academic setting. Critically, to meet the needs of our special education students, we will be holding an information session later in August where the manager of student services will be providing more details about virtual learning and the appropriate accommodations that will be made available for your child in Scenario 2. Again, we want what is best for all of our Odyssey Charter students. Right now, we must adopt and continue in our mission to deliver the best choice education in the safest and most effective way we know how. We have worked extensively over the summer to appropriately prepare for a virtual setting that advances our academics while combating the pandemic and ensuring our community safety.
Ricardo, I think you're still muted,
Ricardo.
Yep, thank you. Juliana, Jackie, thank you so much. This narrative around the academic programs that we will be implementing over the next 30 to 60 days as we ramp up the proposed opening, should it be approved by the board. And now I'm going to kindly ask John Stewart, who was co-chair of the Operations and Services Working Group, together with Kim Wolanski to quickly walk us through the deep considerations that are needed to successfully support the health and wellness thrust as well as the pedagogical initiatives at Odyssey. John? Okay.
All right, there we go. Just got unmuted.
Okay.
Good evening, everybody. John Stewart with Odyssey Charter Facilities Department. I've been with the school for a little over 5 years and I'm proud to present this this slide on the Operations and Services Group. Under the first section, the obstacles to scenario three, we all understand adding 2,000 plus students and staff in the building will increase the health and wellness exposure. In addition, we know that we will have to make some substantial improvements to the HVAC systems, add additional labor, manpower to our staff in order to support a scenario three reopening. The equipment could include adding UVC lighting to the over 80 rooftop units or bipolar ionization in order to support purification of air in the building. You have to consider that we do not have windows that open in any of the 100 plus classrooms in our complex. So we will need to determine other means of assisting with ventilation in the building, as Brittany has explained under wellness. In the scenario three, in addition to labor costs, material, equipment for disinfecting, cleaning, supplies will almost triple, maybe quadruple per month in order to keep the building clean. We were also considering maybe adding up to 8 even more custodians. That's a 50% increase in staffing to support a scenario three reopening. Under the advantage of a scenario one reopening for the semester, with the reduced number of people in the building, not considering no contamination, but you know, we can reduce the contamination considerably. We will maintain our existing personnel without adding anybody. We currently have 11 custodians and 4 maintenance individuals in the department. We will consider moving these individuals, the custodians, to a daytime shift instead of their usual evening shift in order to support the teachers and keep the building clean during the day while the building is occupied. Again, the cost is much lower. Safety, overall health of the community is our consideration here. We want to make sure that we try to protect as much as possible our staff and those other individuals that may be in the building. This will also give us some extra time and preparation for a phase-in scenario two reopening. Under the scenario two reopening, again, limited contamination, we may need some extra personnel, 2 to 3. People to support the scenario two. Costs will still be pretty well controlled. We still want to consider our safety of our staff and teachers. And this will give us a time to prepare for a scenario three option. Just to give you some ideas, adding labor on a scenario three reopening would cost over $160,000. Currently, we've had a training class with all of our facilities department staff, all 15. And we also invited some members of our academia family to attend the class Tuesday, which provided some in-depth COVID-19 training, how to properly disinfect, what options are available, and what products may be available. We're also reaching out to our vendors to create a more open relationship so we can go to several vendors to get supplies and equipment if necessary. We're talking to Cintas, Action Unlimited Resources, WB Mason, for example, and asking for their support to help us through this reopening. We'll be actively engaged in disinfecting the buildings each day when school opens. We're thinking about going to a bio product. It is an antimicrobial spray that can last up to 90 days. We will probably reapply prior to the 90-day expiration. But we're trying to find ways in order to protect all surfaces in the building, teachers, classrooms, and so forth, with a product that will be able to handle the COVID-19 over a period of time. Therefore, allowing our custodial force to handle any other cleaning responsibilities that they may have. Let's see. Excuse me. We are looking at the possibility of installing windows in the buildings as we move forward through the year. The cost is very expensive to give us some outside ventilation. Those are some options that we're also considering to help with ventilation. We recommend under the Operations Service Working Group to go into scenario one, a reopening with a phase into a scenario two reopening. Thank you.
Thank you, John. And just very quickly to add some flavor on the transportation side, when you're talking about 11, 12 kids, all the way up to depending on 6 feet separation or 3 feet separation. So we go from 11 to 20 kids, and our buses are usually carrying 50, 60 kids, sometimes a little more. And we're talking about having to double or triple the size of the fleet's services to be able to service on a rotating basis our student body. So the operations and services, which is the backbone to support the delivery of the health and wellness and the academic programs, is unfortunately really where we're going to see a heavy lift against the school's current budget. So on the final slide, once again, instead of pursuing upfront at the beginning of the year an either or recommendation, we sought to understand the pros and cons of the different scenarios, and we as a working group committee structure felt that the most judicious approach would be to pursue a both and strategy, where we start in a virtual with a very established and programmed ramping up of student attendance on campus, reflecting the broader needs of some of our student communities, our younger students, our special needs students, our special ed students, our high school students that have to have certain activities here on campus. And of course, as we see how the COVID-19 trends evolve, we can definitely be exploring how reopening can be accelerated, hopefully. But we have to be ready to respond should the trends turn negative on us, and be able to ensure the health and well-being of our full community. And so with that, I would like to open up for questions from the board, and I turn the word back over to Elias.
Thank you, Ricardo, and thank you everybody for the briefing materials. Before we go into board discussion, we did want to get thoughts and input from the community. So we're going to move public comments to this part of the conversation to have individuals that sent in their comments have the ability to kind of state what they wanted to state and make their comments. Valerie, I know you were collecting those. Do you have who is up first on that list right now?
Sure, we can start with Katie Manley, who wanted to make a few remarks.
Okay. You can someone unmute Katie. And Katie, so basically, like always, we have a 3-minute time window for all the public comments. So if you can keep it to that, I'll keep a timer on there, but we'll be as flexible as possible for all the briefers. I think right now we have three folks that wanted to make public comments.
Okay, thank you. Can you hear me? Hello?
Hi, we can hear you,
Katie. That's better.
Okay, great. Sorry, I couldn't tell. Sorry. So I just really wanted to take a minute. Can you hear me?
Yeah, what I would recommend is your audio is a little spotty, so maybe turn your video off.
Yeah, I did. Sorry. Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Sorry, I was home, but I had to go pick my daughter up. So now I just have you on speaker. I just wanted to take a minute to say thank you to the working committee and the subgroups, because it was really a lot of time that people put into this. And there was admin, we had board members, we had teachers, nurses, parents. And really, I just want to assure everyone that we considered so many things, you know, the budget, staffing, but number one, it was always the safety and health of our staff and students. That was always what we were, you know, considering at the end of it. So I just really thank you. I thank everyone that worked with us on this. And as a teacher and as a parent at Odyssey, I really am grateful for all the hard work that went into this. So I just wanted to say thanks.
Thank you, Katie. Appreciate the comments, and thank everybody as well, too. Great work by all. Who's up next, Valerie?
We'll go to Lori Aldrich.
Hi, everybody. I have been at Odyssey. I'll be going on my 7th year, and I am a math interventionist for grades 3 to 8. And I'm reorganizing my thoughts after I saw the recommendation. I had sent a letter to Elias and the board yesterday, but now hearing what everyone has said, some of the things have stuck with me. First of all, I want to thank the OCS Board of Directors, the leadership team, and the reopening committees for your tireless work during this pandemic situation. It's really comforting and nice to see the school come together as a whole, and you're a perfect example of that. One of my concerns, though, is Ricardo, when you mentioned that the committees do not think that we will go red, I'm concerned because the president on Tuesday warned that the pandemic will probably get worse before it gets better. And during the live PTO stream today with Governor Carney, he openly admitted that there will be positive cases in schools. We know it's not 100% preventable, but Dr. Anthony Fauci has stated that there are still many unanswered questions about how the coronavirus is spread by children. He openly admitted that teachers are going to be a part of an experiment of the learning curve of what needs to be known. Schools that have chosen to reopen in Georgia and Mississippi have already resulted in positive cases. So how will our school be able to control the number of students who come to school already infected, even in a small group scenario, but are asymptomatic if testing for students is available, according to the governor, but not mandatory? I would like to see Odyssey follow the examples of Philadelphia, Chicago, Newark Charter School, many districts in Maryland, and our neighboring Red Clay District, all who will be implementing remote learning until more is known about the virus and safety protocols can be realistically put into place, and delay the phasing in until we see what this virus does during September and October, and then begin the phasing in. The recommendations from the committee is fantastic, but I think the concern in my mind is what is going to happen in September and October. Let's delay that phasing in until we see what path this virus takes.
Okay, thank you, Lori. Val, are there any other public comments that folks wanted to make?
We do have a few, and I'm happy to read some of the comments on their behalf for folks that may not have necessarily wanted to speak tonight. And some of these are comments, some of these are questions. So the one comment from Sharnay Artemis says, I have a comment. I think it may be like many parents. Is full virtual an option for all grades, especially elementary school? Another comment from Angela Taylor. How can we safely return children to school next month when last year we needed updated vaccination records? There is no cure or vaccine. From Lisa Clark, if OCS decides to go to a fully virtual learning environment, how will the teaching of Greek language and math be addressed? Is there a possibility of putting Greek classes on hold until in-person instruction is held again? From Kristen Hainsworth, my child is entering eighth grade this fall. She wants to be back in school. She wants to see some of her friends. With the recent email with all the possible starting options, I personally would prefer the hybrid method, which Governor Carney approved the other day. Except I see a hybrid learning situation as more of all students whose parents want them to can get to go into school some days and learn home from others, such as a week at school and then a week at home with virtual or 2 to 3 days at school and 2 to 3 days at home. My child does get good grades, but I feel she excels better in the school environment. I just hope something like this can be an option for families that feel the same as myself. As a single parent who works full-time out of the home and healthcare, I am not able to be home to support slash enforce my child's virtual learning, and this spring proved to be very tough with my straight-A student struggling in several classes. Another comment from Harris Corbett. My thoughts are that the school should create a comprehensive plan that includes both screening, temperature taking at school entry, and testing of students and all staff. There should be clear policies as to what will occur if screening or testing results are positive, and these policies should be consistent with the district slash state plan for students. At the start of the school year, however, can we request that all students and staff show evidence of a negative COVID test result? This will give the school administration a clearer picture of the presence of the virus at the beginning of the school year to help inform the administration going forward. Other interventions such as regular hand washing opportunities, nursing services, visible and regular reminders to the school family about prevention and spread may help prevent spread. And he forwarded information from the CDC that may be helpful. Jennifer Stant Clark says, if there is a choice to go virtual, parents can go virtual to start and then switch to hybrid once they have time to assess and feel comfortable. And the final comment from an individual who wished to remain anonymous. My questions are, will Greek be mandatory? What happens to kids with IEPS? Will the school pay for tutors? And that's it.
Yeah, thank you, Val. Thank you, everybody, for the comments. They're all well taken, and we understand where everybody is coming from, too. I guess at this point in time, we have the 5 recommendations from Oversight Committee based on the subcommittees up on the board. I'd like to open it up to the board members for questions, comments, and debate on any of these recommendations. Does anybody have any comments or questions with respect to the recommendations from the committee?
I just have a comment. I also want to applaud and thank the members who sat in the working groups and the oversight committee, especially the chairpersons. They did a tremendous amount of work. They had a very difficult task. They had to study and try to understand the recommendations locally and nationally. And quite honestly, sometimes those recommendations were as ambiguous as anything. They had to analyze the results of the surveys. They had to take into consideration our specific situation, and they had to come up with the best and safest recommendation for both students and teachers. The conditions under this recommendation and decision, the recommendation was made, was extremely tough. I mean, the only constant here is that nothing is constant, that everything is fluid, and all the variables are changing. We have more questions than answers. And we know from the beginning that no matter what recommendation was going to be made, there were some people that were going to be unhappy with it. But I want to reassure everybody that the first and foremost priority in our minds was the safety and the health of the students and the teachers. And this is the best scenario I think we can recommend, because I'm part of the committee at this time, and I urge my fellow board member to accept the recommendation from the reopening oversight committee. Thanks again, guys. You did a tremendous job.
So I have a comment and go ahead.
Thanks. I want to echo Ava's comments and thank everybody for the tremendously hard work. It sure has been a tremendous effort. And to Ava's point, there's so much unknown that making really difficult decisions when things constantly change is nearly impossible. And you guys have done a tremendous job, really thought through and thoughtful and careful and all lots of things considered. I have a couple practical questions just to kind of inform the board. We did vote on a one-to-one technology implementation. Ricardo, would you mind updating us and the community as to the timing? When do we think devices will be delivered?
Definitely. We are looking at a full delivery of the one-to-one technology that is being purchased at this point in time, we're looking at mid-October. Our vendor there's backlog in terms of the manufacturers. They're delivering April, May, I believe, shipments, and are working as fast as possible. Let's keep in mind that I believe that the high school is already on a one-to-one platform. I believe some of the lower school grades are also, I think fifth and eighth will have access to one-to-one, and the rest of the school will be provided the assets that are necessary to be able to, let's not say have a full one-to-one, but have access to equipment so that hopefully no child will have to share equipment. There might be some limitations of what can be done on the loaned equipment versus the new Chromebook technology. But the idea is, from a technology perspective, that each child will have access to a piece of equipment, hopefully not having to share. Dino? Any additional comments that you might want to add? I guess not.
Is Dino unmuted?
All right.
I have a follow-up question. I can't recall if the equipment that was loaned out last spring was essentially left with the children who used it or not, but I guess first question is, does everyone who received equipment last year still have it? Second question, for incoming kindergartners and other new students, are we conducting surveys? Are we doing anything to assess those who would not have had an opportunity to ask for equipment last year who may need something this year before the new equipment comes in, or what's the plan there?
That I will have to defer to Dino, assuming that he is on the call. Okay.
I'll hold my second question because it's more of it may be kind of a discussion point, so I'll let the rest of the board ask their questions.
Okay.
So Ricardo, if he's not on, can you get back to us on that?
Yes,
after the
absolutely. Absolutely.
He's on.
Sorry, is he on?
I see him on.
Okay.
Are you able to unmute him then, Eva?
Okay. Hey, Dino.
I'm under IT manager.
IT manager, can somebody unmute IT manager, please?
He should be able to come in now. I unmuted him.
Thank you. Dino?
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for unmuting me. I can answer all these questions. The question from Aaron was, the devices in the spring, have they been collected? We collected about two-thirds of devices. One-third of devices are still in the hands of our students who are completing their spec ed assignments and summer assignments. Those people are being contacted, and we should have the remaining devices returned to us within a week or so. Definitely by the 18th, we should have all these devices back. We loaned in the spring approximately 320 devices out to families who had no device or not enough devices for their use. As Ricardo mentioned, we have approximately half of the devices that we would need to open the school fully one-to-one. So high school, as he reiterated, is already set for one-to-one. So the high school will start September with their devices. The Chromebooks that we loaned to everybody in the spring will be reassigned to fifth grade and eighth grade to keep the continuity process going. Grades K through 4, 6 and 7 will start the year with using a personal home device or some type of a device that we can get in their hands, whether it be a desktop or old laptops that we're converting to Chromebooks. But these Chromebooks will not be able to be managed in the same environment and methodology that we're doing with the actual school-owned assets. So these devices will be pretty much donated to the families because they're pretty much going to be retired by Odyssey. We're going to be donating these devices, and they actually become the property of the family so that we don't have the liability and responsibility of how the device is used, because we can't monitor the device. So we have approximately 300 devices between desktops and old laptops and Chromebook conversions and stuff to on hand. We'll be surveying the K through 4, 6th and 7th grade families to see who needs devices and gather the data and then begin to disseminate devices and pass devices out either through local pickups or transportation department facilitating deliveries of these devices. The 1,400 devices that we ordered in July are back ordered. There's heavy demand and global supply chain issues globally. The manufacturer can't even commit to a manufacturing date, let alone a delivery date. So our vendor, you know, really is just up in the air. And that's the case for many, many school districts right now. We hope the devices can arrive by October. As soon as the devices arrive, we'll have big unboxing parties, get the devices ready, and hopefully within a few days of delivery, be able to schedule pickups or deliveries to the students for their devices.
Thanks, Dina. Do you think you can get through the surveying and redistribution by the 8th of September?
Absolutely. We're looking at hopefully surveying everybody early next week and having that information by mid-August so that we can distribute devices, you know, maybe by the 20th and let people have a good 2 weeks of having the device, you know, to make sure that they get acclimated to it and, you know, hopefully it works properly and they can do everything that they think they need to do and give people enough time if our device isn't good enough that they can make other arrangements or borrow devices from other places.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Any other questions from board members, comments, thoughts?
Elias, we had one additional public comment come in. That I'll read This is from Rodney Orr. With the school not being totally free, how can we implement a feeding program without knowing what is reimbursable?
Thank you. I don't know how. I'm not exactly sure what the question or comment was from Rodney, but I'm assuming that he's asking with respect to food for either reduced or free lunch students. Is that your interpretation of that?
Yes. The focus is that if it's totally free, we get the full reimbursement. But if we are implementing a feeding program that will not allow us to charge the reduced or paid rates. I believe that that's his concern. But we are working. Kim is working, tirelessly with the Department of Education in terms of getting the and the state is working with the USED to get the waivers to reinstitute the summer feeding program that would cover all of that. And so, yes, we are gearing ourselves up once we get the green light, because our expectation is that, with the loss of the unemployment, a federal $600 per week, the impact on many families, not only at Odyssey, but across the state and the country, will potentially be significant, and therefore the need for a feeding program, I think, is going to ramp up.
Thank you, Ricardo, for that explanation. Any other board members have any comments?
I have just one. So, also want to add my thanks. This is clearly a very well thought out exercise that it's heartening to Lori's point to see this being a really cross-functional effort. So thank you to everyone. It feels like what we have right now is the what. So sort of what's being recommended, and the next step is the how. So I would just request that we get some good sort of project management muscle behind this and really start to put maybe some more details out to the board of how things are working, what timelines are, what the various items are in the work streams to get to both September 8th and then in an ongoing basis, looking at bringing in some sort of hybrid model.
Thanks, Aaron. Any other board comments?
I just have one other comment to a personal comment, but I echo everyone's thanks to all the committees that work so hard. It's really, as a new member of the Odyssey family, I'm grateful to see everyone sort of working together to navigate something that I don't think anybody has ever really faced before. So I extend my gratitude as well. And, I think I would imagine for parents and, for staff, I think communication, the communication coming out of these committees has been great. I think we can continue to do our best to be forthcoming with as much information as possible to help ease some of the uncertainty as we come into the next couple of weeks. So I'm sure that's on everyone's mind, and we'll, as a board member, is something that I hope we can all work together to help ameliorate any of that uncertainty, at least with frequent and full communication. So thank you for everyone.
Thank you, Valerie. I will go down the list just to make sure we're some of the folks that do have thoughts can express them. So I'll go down the list of board members. Anne-Marie, any comments from you on the recommendations?
No, they're very well thought out. They've done their due diligence. They've exhausted all options. There's nothing really more that I can add or can even possibly think that they haven't already thought of. They've done a great job, and now it's just a matter of putting it into action.
Thank you. Georgia, any thoughts or comments from you?
I just want to add that the committee did a great job, and I think everything was well thought out down to every detail. So I think it's now time to, you know, to go through with the plan.
Thank you. Ken, any comments from you? I know you sat on some of the committees as well, too.
I just think it's very clear that what all the committees did was really focus on how we can keep the kids safe and the kids learning, as well as the rest of the staff. And that's admirable, because we really need to tread carefully. And I think going forward, we all are going to tread carefully.
Thank you. Mary Ann, any comments or thoughts?
I'm just going to echo what everyone else has said. This has been a lot of work that's been put in. Lots of the scenarios have been exhausted, did a lot of research, and that it's just time to hit phase two, which is basically chalking out the details of how this plan will be implemented. And that's it.
I think we hit everyone. I know Erin made a number of comments. Val had some comments in there already. Elise, you mentioned that you may have an additional comment that you wanted to make.
Yeah, the comment is really has to do with sports. My heart sank a little bit today. Well, not a little bit, when I saw the DIAA's decision to push all fall sports, essentially canceling the season. I know a lot of club sports have been going on throughout the summer, and it's really one of the ways our kids, you know, build relationships, and it certainly contributes to their mental health and well-being and their health and fitness. And I was wondering if, I didn't see anything in the recommendations or the slides, whether committees have considered, and I know I didn't see Matt, our director of phys ed, on the list of participants. If Matt, I don't want to call him out if he's not there, and maybe it has been considered, whether as part of this virtual learning environment and as things progress and it is safe, whether there would be opportunities to bring kids back on campus, because certainly I'm in cross country. There's no reason they can socially distance and they can continue exercising. I know there are, you know, other sports that are not necessarily contact sports. Have the committees thought about, as part of kind of bringing kids back on campus in these small groups, thought about introducing back sports? And I don't know whether that runs afoul to any kind of DIAA regulations or eligibility. I hope that as you guys think about different innovative ideas of bringing in-person interactions back, sports would definitely be part of that equation.
It has been discussed, Elise, and I think there were different ideas that were thrown out, you know, and I think once they start looking at the details of how to implement the plan, that might be coming into fruition.
And I think also, Elise, as you know, we were, Matt, although he was not an active part of all of this, we were in touch with him, and he was working very closely with, you know, the athletic directors and waiting for the DIAA guidance that just came out. I think your concept that as we look at the on-campus small group kind of activities, we can definitely pull in and consider an analysis of what can be done in a safe way. You know, and it can come forth as we continue to roll out, you know, the proposed activities on campus. I think that can definitely be done.
Thanks.
Thank you, Carlo. I think Erin has one more comment that she wanted to share.
Yeah, thanks, Elias. I just wanted to call out, I know that these recommendations for a lot of parents, especially those who have small kids and who are trying to work and take care of their kids, are really stressful. I'm right there with you. As a mom with a pretty demanding job and two little kids. But I just wanted to sort of call out that it feels like we're all in this together. This is not going to be easy for any of us, but it feels like the recommendation is quite clear from a safety scenario. So just wanted to call out that I am, and I think my fellow board members also are cognizant of the stress that these scenarios put on parents.
Thank you.
If I may add, Nurse Brittany texted me that Matt and Brittany have been talking about the sports, and the thing is that we have to be careful because of use of bathrooms and lockers. But gradually, I guess we should look into, and they would like to look into adding physical activity for older students as well.
Thank you, Eva. I had a couple of questions myself. So we talked about going into a full virtual remote environment as step one of the recommendations. Step two basically says that within 30 days of reopening on September 8th, we're going to start to roll out small group science labs, driver's ed, open classrooms, and things of that nature. So that brings me back to the question that one of the folks brought up with regards to COVID testing. And so I was wondering if Brittany or someone from the health and wellness group can clarify how we're managing COVID testing as we start to bring not just faculty administration, but students back into the school, even in small numbers. And so I know that the counties, and I think now the state has taken over COVID testing for all schools. So what is the plan do we have a plan to do COVID testing before anybody comes back into the school, whether it's a student or a staff member?
Somebody unmute Brittany.
She's unmuted. She should be able to talk.
Sorry about that. So we are actively speaking with both the county and the state. The county has given us some recommendations. We do have some limitations there also. Just so the group kind of knows, the initial plan was that someone came out from the labs to train the school nurse, and then the school nurse would screen and test every single person on campus. So it's kind of a little limiting based on our numbers and how many people we'd have available to the test. So we are working now with the county. We may be able to use some of the state sites that have been set up, and staff would be able to go there and have their tests administered there. The other thing that the county is also looking at is the mail-away swabs. So the swab would come to the staff member, they could swab the inside of their mouth, and then they can mail the test back. Once the test is received at the lab, we should have those results in 72 hours. But the recommendation currently is for every staff member to have them before they enter the school building. So if a teacher was working remotely, they wouldn't need the swab. Unless they were coming onto the building, once they are going to be entering the school building, they would need that test done. Some of our concerns there are, once the test is done though, you can get exposed to something and then you would be positive even though you have that negative test. That was also a conversation we had around the children at Odyssey. There's been conversation about having children screened before school. Again, our start date would be the day after Labor Day. So those screenings would be done before Labor Day. Labor Day weekend would happen, and then we would get the results. So we did have a little bit of discussion around what the accuracy of those results would look like at that point. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. And even after we open on the 8th, it was the plan to immediately start to roll out small group sessions or phase that in over a couple of weeks, and so we could do testing after Labor Day? For either students or staff?
You could do that. Right now, it isn't mandatory for all children to have it. It would be mandatory for staff coming onto campus. Just some other conversation around that. It sounds like they're recommending if you have a school that has a lot of identified positive cases, then that school would screen like every 2 weeks, have that availability. If you were a school that had low cases, you could pull smaller surveys of children and screen and kind of fan it out based on what the percentages were at your school. It's not like a one size fits all.
But in short, I think we've heard both from the county and also from the state that for the school settings, there would be a continuity of testing over time. It's not a one and done, absolutely.
Again, just to make it clear to the board, though, in the paperwork we have currently, the county has only agreed to pay for the first round of testing. It is not yet worked out if the school district itself would need to pay for any subsequent testing. Those tests run anywhere from $75 to $150 a piece. Just so that.
Thank you, Brittany. That helps understand at least initial testing of folks. But then that brings me, I guess, the point two about reopening when small groups, maybe the second question that John had mentioned with respect to costs. I know, John, you had mentioned if we do go to reopening, we're going to have additional staff that would cost us $160,000. Is that over the course of the year, or is that as soon as we go to even this limited hybrid model, does that $160,000 cost kick in immediately? How does that work?
Elias, that would be on a scenario three. If we went to a full reopening, we would need to add at least 8 additional custodians to the staff. That will take care. We will have a split daytime staff and nighttime staff. So initially, under a scenario where we open virtually, where there won't be any additional cost for labor. As we move towards the scenario two and a hybrid and we add more students, we will maybe need to add a couple more custodians to support the current staff. But $161,000 would be under scenario three if we opened full reopening.
Okay, thanks. The last point that I wanted to add, Ricardo, to it, and so I know we have dates on here that talks about full virtual learning until January. I think that's okay. But what I do want to make sure that we're doing, this gets back to what Erin had mentioned, is that we're not putting a date on the wall, but we're using the numbers to kind of help us continually assess where we are with respect to red, yellow, green. Use those numbers and what the state and others are doing to help us come to some conclusions on when we start to ramp up either student engagement in the school or some sort of hybrid engagement in the school, what that is. I mean, safety is the number one priority for everybody. We want to make sure that we can manage all of that, but educating the students is also a priority as well too. And I want to make sure that we're doing that as well too. I know that even in some of these virtual environments, that there are some challenges with respect to the education of the students. We just want to make sure that we can work towards understanding when we can start to roll these things out and not just say January is the date, but that we're continually assessing the state of the conditions, looking at other schools. There are schools in Delaware that are going hybrid, and look at them to see what's happening in those areas to give us indicators of how everything is happening within their context and how we think it would affect Odyssey. So I would say that we, as we start to go into the virtual point one that you have on there, and then point two, which is starting to slowly roll in small group sessions within the first 30 days of opening, we do want to make sure that we're tracking everybody, we're testing everybody, and that we're continuously looking at what the state is putting out in terms of the conditions to make sure that we're doing okay. And again, that brings back to step four, which is if we do get any cases, we do want to understand what the plan is in terms of how do we shut everything down? How do we manage if somebody at school physically comes down with a case of COVID? And what are plans we need to execute that? Because I'm not sure that we have that fully address yet, but we would like to, I guess, between now and sometime in September, have the committees continue to think about how we're going to address responding to COVID-19 cases. So I think that's kind of my perspective on this. And I think that does roll into and roll under the strategies, but we do need to, like Aaron said, start to put some data and muscle behind these recommendations to make sure we understand how we're going to execute them and when. Does that Does that sound reasonable to you from what you have up here?
Elias, absolutely. I think at heart, you know, we've heard it from different people, you know, safety and security and the well-being of our kids. But education is our mission. And so, you know, it's a balancing act of delivering the mission in a way that we can put into place the necessary measures and be able to sustain them, you know, from a operating financial perspective. The next 60 days, as Erin indicated, having a decision with regards to the recommendation so that we can move from planning and analysis to planning for execution and implementation. You know, we will definitely be bringing you updates, and it could be an update in one of the working streams, you know, at one meeting. You know, we can have intermediate updates. We have built a strong communication platform, you know, as has been shared, and we want to continue reinforcing that, be it in terms of transparency, and also in terms of proactively sharing where we're headed, independently of whether we're headed towards green or whether we're staying at yellow, or we have to unfortunately take measures that might be more restrictive because we're headed towards red. We just don't know. And so the best thing that we as an organization on the ground is, you know, deliver a course, but be ready to course correct as quickly and as effectively as possible, keeping the priorities that we've discussed always in front of us.
Elias, you're on mute.
As I said, we do want to get this briefing or a version of this briefing out to the entire community so they understand what's happening and where we're going. And number two, maybe a little bit, maybe, I don't know, a bullet point or two under these recommendations so they understand clearly what the process is and what's going on. Because going virtual, and I support it fully, but it does create significant burden to a lot of our families as well, too. Having to remote with their children, particularly with folks with younger children or single parents or people that don't have someone to help watch their younger kids at home. So it creates challenges for our families, but we do want to make sure everyone is safe, and we do want to make sure that everyone's getting the education that they need as well too. And so there is a balancing act there. Safety first, always, but we do need to consider the entire population of the school as well too, and how we're managing that.
And absolutely, and you know, at the first communication that goes out after this evening, we can definitely, as an attachment, include the deck, you know, so that it gets out there very quickly. And then part of the ongoing dialogue is maybe the follow-up survey in a week's time or something is to call our community with their concerns with the strategy. What are their needs and their concerns to see how we can engage in a dialogue and explore ways that hopefully creative ways that can mitigate some of those concerns.
And additionally, I know we are getting more questions, so what the plan is we're going to gather up all these questions that folks are asking, and we'll try and provide some answers to those questions. But number two, I think within a short period of time, we'll probably want to hold a town hall for everybody to have an open forum for questions as well too, as we move closer to the school year, maybe within the next week or two. Sit down with everybody as they're absorbing this information and internalizing it to be able to come back with questions to the administration on the board with respect to school reopening, et cetera. So we will have an opportunity for everybody, maybe multiple forums where we'll start to have town halls and question and answer sessions for everybody to bring their questions and comments and thoughts to the administration and the board as well too. So absent, do we have any other comments from any of the board members on the reopening scenarios and recommendations? If not, do we have a motion from anybody?
I'll make a motion. I move for the Board of Odyssey to approve scenario 2 for hybrid virtual learning as recommended by the OCS working groups.
Anna Maria, I second.
We have a motion by Elise and a second by Anna Maria. Any debate from anybody or comments? So we'll put it to a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? So the hybrid reopening scenario 2 recommendations pass unanimously. So we will put these out to the community. We'll probably put a little bit, hopefully maybe get a little bit more detail behind it, Ricardo, just to let folks know what's going on. But I know that the committees have done a significant amount of work here. This isn't the end of the line, I don't think. So I don't expect that these committees will be disbanding, but I think that they'll continue to help us provide additional data and information behind how we're going to execute some of these pieces as well too. And so I want to thank the committees for all the work that they have done and all the work that they would continue to do in supporting Ricardo and the administration in managing this crisis where we are. Great work by everybody, and we'll all get through this together. We will, like I said, we will start to bring together some forums for folks to ask additional questions as we move closer to the school. Any other comments or business from any of the board members that we wanted to discuss?
I just want to say we are getting, Elias, you did mention this, but we're getting lots of questions coming in, and a lot of the questions are specific nuts and bolts. How do I, you know, what the schedule might look like? How do I get equipment for my child and so forth? So I just want to emphasize that, you know, we're hearing these comments. They're all going to be caged, and just emphasize that we, you know, in some communication, they'll be addressed. So thank you for keep sending them in. But I, you know, we'll deal with the volume as best we can.
Yeah, we'll somehow, maybe we can roll them up and we'll put like a frequently asked questions or some sort of Q&A session on the website. Maybe we'll send them out as well to folks as part of the weekly updates that we send out or that Ricardo sends out to the community as well, to just let them know what people are asking and what the general responses are to those questions, to the best that we can at this point in time with the data that we have.
So absolutely, Valerie, if you could email me the first data dump of questions so we can bucket them in the different areas. And Elias, you're absolutely correct. This is not the end of the line, it's the beginning of the race. You know, because now the rubber hits the road, and yes, you know, the working groups now will transform themselves from a planning group to an execution effort to be able to open up successfully and then continue operating successfully. So Valerie, if you can send them to me, we can start this dialogue and start addressing. Uh-huh.
All right, thank you, everybody. That's all from us, I guess. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
I move to adjourn.
Second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
8:35, we are adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.